Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
Today you'll hear the second part of a recent interview with author Andrew Craig. His new book is called Presidential Puppetry. Andrew lives in Washington, D.C., and in addition to being a former journalist with the Hartford Courant, he's an attorney and has created the Justice Integrity Project. And here he is in part two of our discussion about his book, Presidential Puppetry.
So we can't believe anything that the corporate media is telling us, basically.
Well, in a sense, but not really. I quote throughout the book the corporate media. I consider myself still a part of it. I worked 14 years for The Current. I was a columnist for Connecticut Magazine. I still appear on the corporate media. I broke news of this book on a CBS affiliate. I think I'd refine your somewhat provocative question, which I think was just to get a rise out of me, is a great question, to say that we have to look at all media, including the independent media, with a context of who are their owners, what are the motivations, what are the strengths and weaknesses on a particular story, and just take a look at a variety of media. By the way, I wrote my first book was called Spiked, How Chain Management Corrupted America's Oldest Newspaper. It was a case history 25 years ago about stories that are puffed up or suppressed by the corporate media and achieved a lot of attention in Connecticut, perhaps because I had a good University of Hartford student graduate do the cover, Cortland Hull, who's rather famous in the region for his Witch's Dungeon Museum in Bristol. He did a great cover. But I would say I have many friends who have worked at The Current, and in fact, my thoughts right now on this Tuesday are with my first editor, Irving Kravsaw, who just passed away. There are many great reporters, editors, and even owners in the corporate media who are trying to do the right thing. And we in the alternative media, where I guess I place myself primarily now, we need to draw from them, but we also have to understand omissions and whether intentional or just of lack of time. And so there's lots of people trying to do the right thing. It's very difficult for them. In my case, I had to read hundreds of books to do this book. I had to spend 4 years in the research and writing, and it became a ever greater mystery where the more I read, the more questions occurred until I think I was finally able to pull it together. But particularly in this era when reporters have very tight deadlines and increasingly work for news organizations that are controlled by the puppet masters on some level, it's hard to get at these concepts.
Now, I wanted to just read a quote from the book and ask you to respond to it. In the preface, you say, the majority are experiencing unnecessary austerity via political process that works for the elite. The process appears broken only to those who fail to understand that decision makers are intentionally gutting our basic democratic procedures and rights, such as voting, checks and balances, due process, the press, privacy, and many other safeguards we take for granted. Could you talk about that?
Sure. Well, I think the core problem is that we have top officials posing as decision makers when they're actually front men and women. I say in the book, they speak but do not inform. They listen but do not hear. Their interests are not the public interests. In other words, we're trained to think of someone like President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton as the most powerful person on earth. My conclusion is that's true in a narrow sense, that perhaps they have a unique access to the nuclear button and certain other prerogatives. ability to speak on national television, for example. But they're really not the most powerful people. We want to think that they are, and that's what's presented to us. But really, there's a core group of billionaires who are very active in politics, based in the U.S. and Europe, who are far more powerful than these presidents. And in fact, part of their power is to create a sense of fear within the presidents that they don't want to talk about. But on this 50th anniversary of the death of John F. Kennedy, I think we have to talk about it. In fact, part of my book quotes one of the top Obama aides as saying they feared a revolt if they took certain actions that those in the military-industrial complex did not want, specifically going after, in a criminal sense, those who broke the law by torturing prisoners. And when I first obtained those comments from a law school dean, very prominent individual, Christopher Adley, 2 years ago, Cheryl, I thought, well, this is kind of cowardly. He's the commander-in-chief. He's the president. Everybody's got a lot of risk. He should do the right thing as a law professor. But the more I've had the opportunity to study these assassinations of presidents and other leading figures, the more and more sinister I think the clear proof is, and the more and more vulnerable I see someone, including President Obama, even with all the protections that they have. They are vulnerable, and not just to the crazed individuals that we hear about as the major threats. One of the huge gaps of the corporate media is to not get into the assassination evidence that some of these may be very complicated, potentially inside jobs. And I've got to say that for years when I worked in Hartford, I would hear the programs on WWUH of the pioneering professor George Michael Ivica, who did Assassination Journal. And like most people, listeners, or maybe it's just me, I was too busy, frankly, to think about it. I had lots of day-to-day responsibilities or entertainments, and I didn't listen clearly and follow it. One of the books I've recently bought in this research is his very important book. It's one of his books, A Certain Arrogance, The Sacrificing of Lee Harvey Oswald and the Cold War Manipulation of Religious Groups by U.S. Intelligence. So George, who I had a chance to meet in person a few times, he's passed on in 2007, but all such work is very important. It's leaving the clues and the evidence for those of us who follow later.
Yeah. In that quote that I read from the book, you had talked about an unnecessary austerity that we're facing, and I wondered if you could just talk about that for a moment. Why is it unnecessary?
The puppet masters, and one of those that I'll name is Peter Peterson, who has contributed $1 billion to Washington think tanks, that's a billion with a B, to promoting the idea that we have to cut way back and people's expectations for what they call entitlements, you know, Social Security and Medicare and all these things have to be cut back because of austerity. That's a prevailing notion here in Washington. It's not among the general public, and it's not, I believe, valid in many ways, but it's governing our congressional shutdown, even by President Obama, who's actually accepted for at least temporarily this year the Republican concept of budgets in many ways, this whole sequester. Here's why I say it's unnecessary. Is President Obama, the community organizer, the liberal, reelected with a huge mandate, they're not fighting for things like President Roosevelt fought for, putting people to work on meaningful jobs with tough oversight. That would increase tax revenues. They have plenty of money when they want to bomb Syria and tap people's phones in these vastly expensive and illegal national security programs, which, by the way, they're not telling the truth. My extensive investigation shows when they say that there's no meaningful domestic spying program. In fact, they're capturing all telephone calls, all social media, essentially, and all email. And they're playing word games when they deny that they're doing it. And I've gotten that from former National Security Agency executives who've essentially resigned in protest after helping design the system. And they've spoken on the record and are readily available to testify to Congress, along with other experts. Nobody wants to hear them because it shows vast waste of money that contradicts the arguments of the puppet masters that we can't afford to honor our commitments to the average American in terms of expanding the economy instead of arguing for austerity. So those are a sample of the many reasons that I suggest in the book that austerity is needless. Now, I will add, however, that when I was a reporter at the Hartford Courant, covering the federal government for 5 years full-time, there was very important programs under the Carter administration to fight waste, fraud, and abuse. And various special interests within the Democratic Party kind of abandoned that fight and gave it to the Republicans. So there is waste, fraud, and abuse. And I, in my book and my project, are nonpartisan. And I think it's time to say, yes, cut out the waste, fraud, and abuse. Fight the special interests. But don't accept the idea that we have to have austerity.
Right, but as long as the puppet masters are in control, that's what we're going to be doing, is following that austerity program, it sounds like. And I was just wondering along those lines if you have any information on what's really going on with the current government shutdown. What's the real dirt behind that?
The real dirt. Well, the real dirt won't come out immediately. I've followed it very closely. I was actually at one of the inner sanctums of the Republicans. I was, in some sense, I wasn't supposed to be there, so I'm not going to mention what it was, but it was right amongst the leaders where no reporters or others are permitted the night of the big vote. But here's what I would speculate. I would not be at all surprised if various puppet masters are shorting the markets in complicated ways that we'll hear about years from now based on what's going on. I mean, you've got hundreds of billions of dollars potentially in the trillion plus at risk here or in play. And many of the, Wall Street just sounds like a vague term, but many of these people involved in these hedge funds, here's what they actually do. They speculate in currency. And this has been going on for 200 years. And it's why some of the big banking houses are heavily involved with the news media. And here, just to be specific, the history of the Rothschild family in Britain is very closely related to speculation in times of war and peace and other such issues, and good sources and influence with the news media. And they're not alone by any means. And so if you're thinking hundreds of billions of dollars are swinging here, it's history indicates to us that somebody's making money on this. And it's not as crazy as it might seem. But I will confess it's too recent and too deep for me personally to have the total dirt right now, okay, as we speak.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's an interesting take on it, and there's probably some truth to that. Can you tell me who some of the other puppet masters are? You mentioned Peter Peterson, and doesn't he work for some big corporation like the Blackstone Group?
He does, and it's on record and documented that he spent $1 billion on this austerity. But one of the things that the puppet masters do, if we follow that analogy, and I will name some of them, is they're above the stage, or they're below the stage, so we don't see them. And if we start talking about them too much, it gets kind of boring for the ordinary person, because we haven't heard of these people because they're mostly men who like to stay in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And even when there's someone like a Peter Peterson who shows up, he's in his 80s, very handsome, vigorous, articulate man. I just saw him in action close up a few months ago. Even they may be the front people for somebody, some gnome behind the scenes. So let me start naming some of the big puppet masters here. One is David Rockefeller. He's 98 years old. He was born in 1915. Incredibly influential in the startup of the CIA, many foundations. Our news media focuses in on people who write checks to candidates. I doubt if David Rockefeller writes any donations to candidates. He has people who have worked for him, like Henry Kissinger, who are themselves puppet masters by this point. And even Henry Kissinger probably doesn't donate to hardly anything. They have people, CEOs, way down in the stepping ladder who take that kind of visible impact, and they do it with both parties. So we've got titans at a truly national scale, like David Rockefeller, who still goes to the Bilderberg Group annual meetings. So if you want a starter kit of who are the puppet masters, this is a secret gathering every year. Usually it's in the U.S. during election years so they can help orchestrate our elections. But this year it was in the fancy suburb of London. Petraeus was there. Donald Graham of the Washington Post was there. The new owner of the Washington Post, Jeffrey Bezos of Amazon.com, a founder, he was there. You usually have very top national security people, usually someone from the Dutch royal family, the English royal family, and this is just 130 people. And it's all closely secret, but some of the names seep out. That's an excellent list of the puppet masters. You also have an overlapping list of the top people who go to the Bohemian Grove, particularly in the Mandalay cabin. I've got a secret list of that secret cabin who goes there. It's approximately 32 people, people like Colin Powell, Henry Kissinger, along with the chairs of huge companies, often defense companies. So that's kind of a sample of who we're talking about. And as a rough guide, it would be people who have control of at least $500 million and up in assets and who are very interested in political affairs. The Koch brothers are two, quite obviously. They've each control about $34 billion in assets. And spending on politics to control politics is literally nothing for them. For them, it's an investment. For many of listeners and voters, contributing to a candidate is money out of the pockets of people going through austerity. These puppet masters might often reap a benefit of 8 to 10 times the value of their contributions in return on investment through favorable regulation. So you can see why the rich get richer. USA Today did a study of Sheldon Adelson, who contributed $150 million in last year's election to help elect Romney. And their prediction was that if Romney had been elected, that $150 million investment would have resulted in over $2 billion in gains to Adelson.
Now, it seems to me that since 9/11, the whole climate in the world has changed, and it seems like the criminality of these puppet masters has, their agenda has gone like full speed ahead in a much more aggressive manner. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Part of it, and this helped get me started on the book, is I'm deeply offended as an attorney for more than 20 years here in Washington and as a reporter that nothing seems to be done about blatant criminality. And in fact, the watchdog tools of the law and of journalism are actually perverted to assist this criminality. And in part of the book, I mentioned how early on I was at the National Press Club Barr talking about the frame-up of Don Siegelman, who I mentioned earlier in the first part of the interview, and a wise old newspaper man said, "Why do you care?" It's a good question, since I've spent 4 years on this. And I simply said, you know, I've spent 40 years in the news and legal business, and neither one can do their job, and I'm offended by it, deeply offended. Yes, the criminality is very deep. My office is almost across the street from the Justice Department headquarters on Pennsylvania Avenue, right upstairs from Jack Abramoff's former restaurant. And the Justice Department, which I admired so much when I covered it in Connecticut, some of the great judges and prosecutors I covered, they're not doing their job. They're allowing injustices, cover-ups to occur, and this is under both Bush and Obama, and it's totally disgraceful. And nobody in Congress and very few people in the press are doing anything about it. They can't, really, because the Justice Department covers up for wrongdoers. They, in some cases, actually help frame people. And politicians don't want it to happen to them. Reporters don't want to lose their sources. And it's disgraceful.
Yeah. Now, what has the response been to your book so far?
Well, this is one of the first interviews. I think it's, let me give a pro and con. The pro is it's achieved some great endorsements, including by Cyril Wecht, a pioneering forensic pathologist, and Bob Alden, former head of the National Press Club and editor at the Washington Post for 49 years. There are many journalists and other public officials, former public officials, who are deeply concerned and are giving it rave reviews. It's really just coming out. And I think I'll also say quite candidly, Cheryl, that some of the revelations that are on every few pages here, so surprising, those who are involved in politics, have partisan interests, or reporters who think they don't have time to dig into it, that some of the logical people who might help a book, and I see this among some of my old friends in Connecticut who I tend not even up until point to mention much about the book to, because I can tell that the concept of Obama intelligence background is just so different from what most trained professionals might think, that in the words of a friend of mine for 40 years, she said, if I didn't know you for 40 years, and if you didn't have 1,000 footnotes, I might think you'd lost it somewhere.
Andrew Craig, is there anything that we haven't talked about today that you want the listeners to know?
Well, two things, briefly, Cheryl. One is that I tried to portray the book in an entertaining way. So it's taking the listeners or the readers with me as someone in Washington who thinks they know what's going on, but how I discovered bit by bit that these stories are much more complex than I could have realized, even after being kind of an insider in Washington for 20 years with the luxury of time and pursuing the right clues. So it's much like these TV dramas, except it names the names, reports the facts, and brings it home to people's real lives. The other thing is that I want to end here, as in the book, on a note of hope, that while some of this may seem very depressing, the whole point of this is what I call a key to the future, K-E-Y, knowledge empowers you. Mm. And once you know their secrets, you know, how they're blackmailing each other with this spying, surveillance, and intimidating the reporters and congresspeople from doing their jobs, once you as a reader know their secrets, then you don't need to be taken in. And this is a nonpartisan book. It hammers both sides. And I was just on a Tea Party show, I was on a left-wing show, and I broke the thing on a big mainstream CBS affiliate in New Orleans, WWL. For people who have wondered what the heck is going on, this tells you, and you can then hold these people to account without their self-serving stories.
Right, and I think once you start seeing through even parts of it, you see through a lot of other things they do that you can tell. You know, I've sort of developed a way of just when I hear things now, I say, oh boy, this sounds like another line of bull. I mean, you just get better at it once you know what they're doing.
Well, exactly. Here's one example that we didn't mention just very quickly that I think helps illustrate the point. But I've met many reporters who cover the White House or high finance here in Washington who don't know that former Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner's father was Obama's mother's boss when she was in Indonesia at the Ford Foundation. And once you trace back how important these entities like the Ford Foundation are, how they're connected to intelligence activities, and the whole Rhodes Scholarship, Council on Foreign Relations, all of these links going back a century, then you realize that, you know, it's not like the reporters are withholding information why this very controversial Tim Geithner got his job. They just don't know it.
Right. It's been suppressed enough so even they don't know it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
these are the ties that bind that, particularly at this time of crisis, the public has to know, even if it's not reported.
Right. Andrew, where can people get the book Presidential Puppetry? And maybe you could tell us about your website.
Well, probably the easiest way is to Google presidential puppetry, and there's a site that has links to Amazon. Of course, people could go directly to Amazon and get it there, or ask for it to be delivered at a bookstore, and as the word gets out, maybe it'll be stocked at bookstores, but it's probably easier just to order it directly and probably cheaper from Amazon at this point.
Yeah, and I'd actually like to recommend that people buy it, order it from a local bookstore and give them the business instead of making Amazon a monopoly.
That's a great example. I guess I'm glad you mentioned it. By the way, here's one little detail that's in the book that most people don't know, but not only has the founder of Amazon bought the Washington Post and still control Amazon, but Amazon recently won the contract to handle the CIA's cloud computing. Now, that's under challenge, but think of the incredible power that is linked up with the most influential newspaper, the Amazon database, and potentially the CIA contract.
Right. And, you know, we don't have a lot of power as people, but that is one of the powers that we have, is we can choose not to buy from these giants who are violating our civil liberties.
Well, in that same spirit, let me squeeze in that I love Connecticut. I have many friends there, and I would totally love the opportunity to speak to a group, almost no matter how small, in any part of the listening area and come up there, talk at a bookstore or even just a gathering of 5 or 10 people interested in this topic. And so if people go to the Presidential Puppetry website, send me an email, I'd love to get back up there and meet people face-to-face and just talk about these issues.
That sounds great. Maybe we can work something out ourselves here. We often have speakers come in, so I'll get back to you on that. And then your website for the organization you have, the
Integrity Project, justice-integrity.org. What we do there is look at cases around the country where it seems like there's potential injustice. So please send us information or at least check out what we have.
Okay, great. And I want to recommend your book, Presidential Puppetry by Andrew Craig. I read the book. I couldn't put it down. It's got lots of really great information in it that you won't find in a lot of other places. So, Andrew, thank you for being on the show.
Great pleasure, Cheryl. I really appreciate it.
And again, that was the second part of an interview with author and attorney Andrew Craig, who wrote the recently released book, Presidential Puppetry. To hear the first part of this interview, go to the website radioforall.net. Click on Contributor, and then look under the letter C for Cheryl. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.